listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to the show, Your Ultimate Life, here on LA Talk Radio. You know, people ask me every time I have a new conversation, standard question, how are you today? My standard answer is I'm outrageous. Best day of my life. And that's always true. And we're here to talk about how to create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And we're here to talk about some special guests. Today, I'm joined by a guest who's got an amazing story and is doing cool stuff, so cool it's just running out of his ears. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kellen. It's so great to be here, all the way from Australia.
Yeah, all the way from Australia. So it's in the afternoon here, late in the afternoon, and I expect it's, what, 7 o'clock there or something?
11 a.m.
Oh, 11 a.m., a little bit later than I thought. Thought you had to get up early for this. Anyway, it's fabulous to have you on the show. I've had a chance to visit with you two or three other times over the months, and your life and your story is amazing. And, you know, right in the preamble to the show, we were talking about ultimate life and how this season right now for you is fantastic. I'd like you to tell me more about that. Why is life for you right now good? And I say that in the context of so many people live in the thought that life sucks and it would be better if fill in the blank.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great question because I look at my own life and we all have pain points. And it took me a long time to get my head around this, but I find that the biggest moments in life where I've been able to move myself forward and grow has been through pain. It's like something, whatever it is, there's been something. I was bullied as a young kid that caused me to change. I was then bullied as an adult. And I said, you know what? I've had enough of this. I'm going to change my body, get the self-confidence that I need. And I did that through the gym. And then that has kind of put me on a trajectory to understand that you've got to address the pain. You've got to pull it all out. You've got to stand in the mirror, like the virtual metaphorical mirror, and just look at where you are in life and say, well, the only way that this will change is if I change. If I want a better life, I've got to change. And so I got into this habit of just changing and wanting to work on myself and grow. And so I'm 57 now, and I think about all the decades that I've been spending on myself working. But what I love about AI, now, most people don't use AI strategically in the right way. They use it for fun and content and stuff, but I use it to grow myself strategically. And I've been using it for the last 12 months, and I have grown so much in the last 12 months, probably more collectively from a personal way in the last 5 years. And it's helped me unpack a whole bunch of stuff that I've been carrying around since I was a kid. Why do I think that way? Why do I, you know, beat myself up over these things? To realize that, as you led to today, is I've just been reflecting on how much I've grown this year, like personally. And yes, there's been a lot of pain in my life and a lot in the last couple of years, losing my daughter and everything. But you can choose to stay there or you can choose to grow. And I've chosen to become a better human as a result of it, a better man, leading other men to be better, helping people be seen and heard and listened to. And I just feel that it's limitless where we can go. And it's just recently I've been thinking, wow, I'm in such a great place in my life. I just feel so integrated with everything. It's almost like, well, we've got a picture of the world map in the background, but your planets, and it's like all of a sudden everything is just, oh, Kellen, it all makes sense. Now I understand why I had to go through all of that to come to here. And the most exciting bit is I know that both you and I are probably, like, individually, maybe even collectively, there are going to be some unbelievable things that happen in our life before we leave this planet, and we don't even know what they are yet, but we know there's going to be great things. I think, how exciting is that? Some people want to know everything. I don't want to know it all. That's boring.
I agree. I don't want to know anything, but I agree with what you just said there. And so I want to go here because in the personal development world, I know you've had a lot of physical stuff. You've done some, you know, a lot of physical work and had some physical centers and you've, you know, health and fitness and stuff like that. Is it really possible, and this is really a question I'm asking as proxy for all the people that are watching, is it really possible for anybody that wants to right now to create a life that they really love? Is that possible, or is that just a bunch of hype that people like you and me sit around and say?
Well, I like to think that I will never ask anyone to do anything that I haven't done before. I'll never coach somebody in a space that I haven't dramatically lived and grown through. And yeah, I think it doesn't matter where you are right now, you can make things better. And I think one of the challenges that I had, I started my professional career as in accounting and becoming a chartered accountant. And I thought that that was going to be the way forward for me. But after probably 6 or 7 years in that industry, I realized that I ain't loving this. And I thought, what am I going to do? But I stayed curious and hungry, and I would keep saying, so what am I going to do? And like, keep in mind that when I started looking for a career, we're talking early 80s, and that was in an era where there was no internet and where you followed what your parents pretty much did, or your dad in my case, because mum wasn't allowed to work and all that kind of stuff. So it's like you picked your career and that was what you were going to do for the rest of your life. Very different now, but that's the mindset I had. So I thought, well, I'm only good at maths and I liked a bit of business stuff, so that seemed to make sense to me. But I knew that wasn't what I was going to do forever, but I didn't know what. And I kept asking myself, what am I going to do? And the only people that I knew that loved what it is that they did in the 80s were sports people. And it's like, I'm a short guy. All the sports I'm good at, you've got to be 6 foot or more and really athletic, fast, whatever. That's not me. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? And so I thought, I don't know, but I'm going to go on this journey. So 19 years into my corporate life, and I changed various roles and so forth, I realized that what I was meant to do is what I'm doing now. And it's just expanded and expanded. And my very last corporate job I had, I was being paid six figures. I had a lot of responsibility. I really enjoyed the job. But there's a difference between enjoying your job and it's like, oh my God, I love this. And so
a wild and giant difference, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I like to say now that I've really designed the life that I do not need a break from. So I don't need to go on holidays. I don't need the weekends. Like I work 7 days a week, but on Sundays, my only day off when I don't have client facing time, I'm working on me, but I'm always working because why would you not do what you want to love? You know, why would you not do that? And I just love what I do so much now. I impact so many people and now like having a global impact, it's like it's beautiful. And I came from a place of I didn't think I would ever find something that I would love.
Well, thank you for saying that, because that is reinforcement. I want to assure everybody listening that I didn't go find Rob with an ad saying I need the person that's going to say all the stuff I want. He had this real life, and you don't know very much about the story yet, but you will in a minute. It is the truth. We give away our power with these beliefs. You said, I'm too short, I'm not athletic, and I can't do this, and I can't. And the because is this long list of things and stories that we learn, perhaps innocently, from parents, teachers, society, whatever, until we stop believing that. And you said, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And without even knowing exactly what you were going to do. So you went about to create a different life. 19 years in the corporate of all kinds of responsibility with numbers and finance and leadership and whatever it was. You know, I had all kinds of success there too. And you get to a point where you say, you know, I'm not dying doing this. This ain't happening. So I got to do something else. So what happened? What did you do to create next?
Well, I think, as I said, I was staying curious, and I was about every 3 to 4 years in a role that I was in. I'm like, yeah, it's not this. So what's next? You know, what could I be doing next? And I remember I went through a phase of thinking, well, do I want to go out? I loved landscape design and that kind of stuff. I lived on 2.5 acres, and I thought maybe I could do this. And then, like, obviously, all for 37 years now, I've been working out and focusing on my health and own wellness and everything. And through that process, I thought, well, hang on a second. if I do that, even if it's like design work and that kind of stuff, it's very physical. I'm going to come home exhausted. How am I going to still take care of doing the muscle work and doing all that kind of stuff? I'm going to be too tired. That just didn't make sense. And then one day I just thought, hang on, this was in 2007. And like, I didn't know anyone that was successful in the health and fitness industry, but there was something in me that said, I was sitting on a bench, I was having a rest. I was in my studio. I just finished a set of bench press and I was sitting up on the edge of the bench. And this is, I'm not exaggerating here. I actually looked up at the light, like the fluorescent light. I looked up and I said, why don't I do this? And then in that moment, it all just led on to one thing to the other. Like, how can I do this? I'm not going to go back to uni. I'm not going to go for 3 years. What's the shortest way that I can do this? There, no, in 2007, there was no online course. You had to be in person. So what could I do? Still do a full-time job, do this on the side. So I found a course where I could do, get the minimum qualification to do what I wanted to do over 12 months while I was still working. And then my plan was, it was a 5-year plan to then move out of corporate and into this. I got 2 years in and I'm like, I need to do this now. And so I stepped away from the corporate career, not really knowing how to run a business, but I got a coach around me to help me. And from that point on, I was like, man, I'm doing it now. And do you know what? People in corporate, do you know what they said to me?
I'll bet you. I'll tell you what I'll bet they said. Hey, how did you do this? We want to do it.
They said, hey, do you know what? You can always come back when it doesn't work.
Oh, they were not helping. All right. So they said, you're not going to make it.
Thanks for your support.
Yeah.
And so that just fired me up more. So the very first thing that I did was resign from the Institute of Chartered Accountants. And that was, to me, was the equivalent of burning the boats.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going back. I will make this work no matter what. And because I love it, at that time, loved it so much, I thought, how could you fail? Like, how are you going to fail at your goal, Callan? Like, it's your goal. If you fail at it, it's like, well, clearly you didn't love it enough. Because if you love it, you will do whatever it takes to make it work. And that's how I got to where I was. And it all came about from someone threatening to kill me back when I was 19 years of age. And it kind of brought all of those bullying things that had happened to me as a younger kid. And I'm like, I'm an adult now. I am too old for this. Why do I feel immobilized, belittled? Why do I not have the confidence to stand up for myself? And for me, I thought, if I have big muscles, no one's going to do that. But in the process of creating the body that I wanted, I realized that it had nothing to do with the body, but everything to do with how I felt about myself, my low self-esteem, the way that I looked, all that kind of stuff. So it's been such a beautiful journey. And then I started working with people on their health and wellness and stuff and having a great impact there and actually realizing, yeah, it's not about their bodies either. Yes, that's the byproduct, but we've got to get everything else right first. And it's normally what's going on up here that's messed up, that's causing the poor eating, et cetera. So now I kind of come up from the other perspective. We build the foundation of health and wellness, and we build the empire above that, and that's what's going on in here.
Well, I love that, and I want to ask you, listeners, how many times have you heard that same thing from a different story and a different angle? The thing that matters most is what you believe. What you actually believe is possible for you. And the kind of support you get around and the choices you make to do it. So you built a health and wellness, I'm going to call it an empire, that was fun and good for you and successful. And so tell me a little bit more about that in terms of how were you tested in your resolve? Because what you've told me so far is, well, I just decided to do it and went and did it. I don't know. But everybody, in my experience, has some kinds of struggles or setbacks or, you know, the resolve gets tested, things don't work right. How about?
Yeah. Welcome to business. Yeah. So I guess with the coaching organization I was working with at the time, so I'm based in Melbourne, Australia, so that's southeast of the map. And this was a a national coaching business affiliated with the US. And they had a lot of clients in Perth, in north of Australia and everything. In other words, much warmer climates than here, like all year round, it's good. And they were talking about these different programs of marketing and so forth, where you're going to, I started out by running group sessions, boot camps and things like that. And I said, you're going to be able to fill leads. You're going to get 20 people plus per session. Once you get to 20, add another trainer. Maybe you can take it up to 30 or 40. It's all outdoors. You can manage that. Some people were doing that for 2-3 classes a day. So I thought, all right, well, I'll create one class a day, but we'll do it every day except Sundays. And I was not getting anywhere near full classes because the numbers work. If you can get 20 people at the price, it's about $400 a month, something like that. Do the sums, do work out the marketing. You're making really good margin. You're doing that multiple times. That works really well. But I was only getting 10 people, 5 people. When it was getting to winter, no one wants to train outside and when it's wet and it's freezing cold, it's nighttime, not here. But hey, go north, they're training on the beach, it's beautiful weather all the time. You know, it's amazing. Sunset over the ocean, fantastic. 20, 30 people multiple times a day. And it's not working for me. And I'm like, what's going on? And everything other people were doing, it's like, you know how everybody else has it easier than you? And I'm like, this just isn't working for me. And it forced me to rejig that whole model to how was I going to get people so I didn't have to remarket every single month to the same people. Gee, can you please buy another month? So then I changed the model to 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. And then that changed everything. It got me through winter. From a financial, like a cash flow perspective, but then it also enabled me, I had trainers doing all the training to start with, thinking, oh, I'm a smart man, I'm coming out of corporate, I know how to do all this, I'll get other people to run it, the money's coming in, you know, oh, yeah, I'll get, you know, $16,000 a month, easy, I won't have to do any of the training, I'll just run the marketing and stuff. Well, it didn't happen, and the people let me down, and the people would, for a 6 a.m. session in another suburb, I'd get a text message at 5:30, can't make it today, I'm sick. So you've got to be joking me. Young kids and, you know, I'm the full-time dad and all that kind of stuff. And I was realizing that our attrition rate was really high. I'm like, but why? And it wasn't until I started talking to people and starting attending more of the sessions, realizing these people aren't training the way that I would. They're not doing it the way that I would want it. They're not caring about the people, all that kind of stuff. So it forced me back into the business in a role that I didn't want to do, but it changed everything for me. And so that was probably the hardest first lesson that I thought, I'm smart. I've never run a business, but I'm a business person and I can work this out. But I realized that I had to get down on my hands and knees and do all the dirty work to realize how I needed to do this better. But otherwise, it was just theory. So that was probably the hardest first lesson. And now I run a very, very lean operation. I'm very focused on always, where can I trim costs? How can I do this more effectively? How can I use AI to do things more effectively? Using platforms like Zoom and the way we're communicating here today is great for the global work. It's opened up my mind to, oh, wow, COVID was actually really good because it forced people to say, well, the only way I'm going to let you communicate and not be in person is via technology. And so now I work with people around the world using the technology, whereas before people probably wouldn't have seen, well, how and why would they work with me? And so I think that's been a really cool evolution as well. So there are so many phases, there's so much pain because it's your own business, but because if I don't do the work, I don't eat.
It's so powerful. Yeah, so powerful and so important. And the reason I wanted you to walk through at least one of the valleys is because I don't care if you're running your own business or if you're experiencing disruptions at work because of AI and robots and the way that the workforce is changing, it's going to be a giant upheaval. There was one in North America, particularly in the U.S. in 2008, where everything was messed up. because of real estate and giant crash. And here's another one. This AI introduction and robots and that kind of stuff is the biggest change in a generation. And it's going to drive you, no matter what business you're in, through some kind of a change. And so the story that you just gave was, wow, I thought I knew how to do this. I thought things were going to stay the same, and they didn't. And you had a choice to wither and die or to say, wait a minute, I need to figure this out, because I'm not going to go knocking on the door and say, yeah, you know, you said I could come back. You know,
yeah,
you weren't going to
go. That's like crawling through the doggy door of the
Not going to do that. So what do you do? Do you still run the fitness business successfully today? You said, sounds like you do, and expanded the market to a global reach.
Yeah, it's only been a recent journey. This is part of the personal growth and going through pain stuff where you just don't know what's going to come as a result. I know you and I had a conversation about this previously, but I feel like one of the things that used to confront me was my confidence, my self-image. Oh, I'm not going to ask because you'll probably say no. So it's just easier. I just won't ask, you know. But I look at it this way. If you put yourself out there and you ask, whatever it is, it's like you're either going to get a yes or a no. So it's a 50% chance. But what I've learned is that every single time, whether you get the yes or the no, you will grow. And I find that you tend to grow more through the no. Because you can get a no and it can hurt you emotionally. Let's say you're asking somebody out on a date, for instance. Then if they say no, then it's like, oh, what's wrong with me? Oh, you don't like me. Oh, and let's say you ask out 10 people and they all say no. At some point, you're going to start to think, what's wrong with me?
Right. The only common denominator in all that is me. So I must suck, right?
That's right. And so you start asking yourself questions and making up a story. So I'm never going to ask again. But where the growth is in understanding, well, why am I getting the no's? Am I asking the wrong people? Is it the way I'm asking? Is it the way I look? Do I smell? Do I, you know, whatever it is. But 100% of the time you get the growth. So now I'm like, well, I'm just going to step into whatever it is. If I get a yes, great. There'll be some growth. Probably there'll be more no from a growth, but more growth from a no, but I'm just going to step into it. So whenever there's anything tough like that, within 12 to 24 hours, I will do whatever's required to address whatever it is, right?
Now, that's not a muscle that happens automatically. What did you do to develop the ability to decide you're going to grow more from no than yes?
A lot of SH1T, if I could put it that way.
Yeah,
going through a hell of a lot of pain and realizing, do you know what? I can stay down here. Or if I want to make my life better, which I did, I realized that, well, I got to change. And so I've got to unpack it. I've got to realize why, you know, why am I going through that? Why am I interpreting it that way? Right? Because we can get a disappointment. So let's go back to the dating scenario. The way that I look at life now is if I get a no, and don't get the feeling that I'm out there asking lots of people on date. I haven't been on a date in 6.5 years, but like if I get a no, I'm like the universe is looking after me. And I say my daughter Liv, she's looking out. The universe and Liv are looking after me. Dad, that's not the right person. So that's why you're getting a no right now. You need to go, you know, over this way. So I just believe that whatever, if something doesn't work out. So I use another example. I was invited to go to the United Nations in September with our Australian Prime Minister here as part of the work we're doing around social media to increase the age of social media. And there, it was all last minute sort of things. It didn't work out the way that it could have. If I was the Prime Minister organising this event, it would have been far better. But it didn't feel right in my gut that, yeah, there's just something not right here. Last minute, they said that, yeah, they're not going to allow me to speak. They were, but now they've decided not to. It was going to cost me 10 grand to go there. They were going to pay, but now we're not going to pay. So, yeah, there's 10 grand. It was a small room where only there was nobody really of influence from the 193 countries that attend. And it was for about an hour and 15-minute meeting. I'm like, okay, it's in New York. It's going to be about 60 to 70 hours of travel time jet lag, cost me 10 grand, no impact. I don't think I'm supposed to go. And so I was like, okay, yeah, is it a great opportunity to go to the United Nations? Yeah, absolutely. But it didn't feel right. And it felt like I had a conversation with Liv about it. And she's like, yeah, it's not meant to be. And so I just look at it that way. So that makes, I suppose, getting that rejection, if you want to phrase it that way, being that way. So coming back to how did all this lead to where it is that I am now? So I started in health and wellness, but through all of this and what I was talking about before, I've been in business now 16 years, there's a lot of personal growth that I've been focusing on. And then it's a little bit like shiny object syndrome. You're chasing, oh, what if I go over here? Oh, what if I do this? And, you know, I've got the book, I've got the podcast, I've got all of these different things. But I kind of felt like people could be confused by the Rob Evans brands. It's like, well, are you the fitness guy? Because you talk a lot about this. And people that are coming to me as clients, they're saying, wow, you're so much more than just like a trainer. You know, I didn't think that I would get this. I came for this, but I didn't think I was going to get all this as well, because I'm changing lives. And I thought, well, yeah, I wanted to move more into the coaching side of things, where I'm not like counting reps and helping people with those other things. And hence this year, out of going through and processing all the pain, how do I pull it all together, came this idea of the 1% coach. And I'm like, oh, I live the 1% life. I have, in terms of my health and wellness and everything and my mindset. And I thought, well, that really makes sense. Now under that banner, I can pull everything in. So the health and wellness side of things is what I now call the 1% method. And that comes back to that foundation. And so for the first time in my life, about how we started this conversation, I feel like I've never been in a better place, because now all of a sudden, everything that I do is the 1%. We've got the 1% method, which is the health and wellness, the 1% legacy, which is around all the stuff I'm doing with my daughter, the 1% voice, which is around my two podcasts, and the 1% edge, which is our magazine that we pulled together. And it all fits under the one banner. And for the first time, it's all made sense.
So that's spectacular. And I'm gonna shift now a little bit. You've got a couple of podcasts, I know, because I was a guest on one. I know that, I think I was, wasn't I, on one of your shows? Yeah, I was. Okay. Yeah, I was. So thank you. But anyway, but you've referred to Liv, and you're having conversations with her. And so she's your daughter. And there's a whole story about that. You talked about processing pain. And so what you've described is a corporate life, accountant, not doing that, finding, I want to quit, the ladder's on the wrong wall, even though I'm successful, I'm going to go find this thing. And at the same time, you are a dad, you have a kid, no surprise, and you're doing that kind of thing. And then some difficulties came up with that and brought some real tragedy in your life. And that's now a big piece of what you do, and was the genesis of why you might have been able to speak at the United Nations, except they got stupid at the last minute and didn't let you. So talk about, and the reason I want to go here is, you know, you had the business valley, which is, holy crap, nobody's coming, Melbourne's not the right temperature, whatever it is, I got to go figure out how to do this my way, in a different way, in a different place. And then you had this personal tragedy that's led you on a different mission that is very consistent with 1%, 1% life, 1% truth. I got a book right now that I just finished. It'll be out in a week, called Coaching and the Rise of AI. And it is an exploration of what I think is going to happen in the next year with coaching. And that is that 95% of coaches are not even going to be able to make a living because of what's going on with AI. And that's just my thesis. And that leaves 5%, 3%, and you're talking about the 1%. So this is something we agree on, just conceptually, about living to that degree. So tell us a little bit about this other personal thing, if you're willing, to the level you want to, because it's driven a lot of your thinking and required you to show up consistently as a 1% dude.
Yeah, thank you. I've got two daughters. I have Emily, who's my eldest, and Liv is a couple of years younger. So Em's 20 and Liv would be 18. When she was 13, It's a really long story, but she developed an eating disorder from a bullying instance from school. Now, the problem was that she couldn't talk about it, or she wouldn't talk about what was going on for her at that time. So I'm divorced. My ex-wife, she lives just around the corner, like less than a kilometer away. So it was handy for the kids, and we share, you know, week on, week off kind of thing with the girls. So I actually had them a little bit more. And I used to ask Liv, I said, do you understand what's caused the eating disorder? And she said, yeah, I do. But she says, I'm not telling you about it. I said, that's okay. I said, as long as you understand, I said, as we go down this journey, hopefully you can understand how to also, you know, get free of it. Over 2 years, it just got worse and worse. And obviously she's going through the hormonal change as well. She's trying to find her identity in the world. And guess what? We had COVID in there as well. And people on your side of the world may not even know, but Melbourne, where I'm from, was locked down more than any other city in the world. Over, I think, 320 days, something like that in total.
Wow.
It was just ridiculous. About 6 different lockdowns. And in some ways, it was great for Liv and for Em. One, they, like Liv, we through this journey, we found out she had ASD, so she's on the spectrum. And that explains some of why she felt the way that she did. And we're hoping that all of these things would help to give her a little bit more information about understanding herself. And so not having to go to school but still doing the online class and stuff was actually really good for her. And she was away from that, the pressure of school. But through one of the, it might have been the fourth or fifth lockdown we had here, the kids were allowed to go back to school. And they were back at school for 2 weeks before they locked us down again for like another month or 6 weeks or whatever. But what COVID did to people, it made them less kind. And so the kids were online more. They were becoming meaner. And so when she went back to school, this poor, gentle, like beautiful soul was in the end, when Liv did get around to telling me, she was food shamed and shamed about her body. Now, keep in mind, this is I'm short. She was short. She's like about 30 kilos and she was called fat, like just without even describing what she looked like. You would just know at 30 kilograms and 15 years of age, you are not fat.
I was going to say, I'm thinking toothpick.
And she was shamed over the food that she was eating. And what was she eating? A banana. Like it just doesn't make any sense. And it was her friends that were doing it to her. And so this sent her on a spiral. She already had some self-confidence issues. Like she had difficulty forming friendships and stuff. And then 38 hospital admissions later, and very traumatic. We're talking different rules probably here to in the US, but in order for an ambulance to come and pick up your child and take her to hospital, given the situation she was in, it requires police to be here as well. And that was medical restraints as well as physical restraints. So you're tied down to the stretcher, me having to hold her and carry her out from under her bed and do all this sort of stuff, explain to the emergency services how it would happen, how we could get her there, getting her to hospital, having 15 people in the room, me having to hold her to stop her from hurting herself and explaining to the doctors, this is what you can do first. She will allow you to do this. I'll need to hold her. Me having to hold her while everybody else in the room so that we could do an x-ray, because I would have to hold her to do the, you know, to hold her still and everything. Like horrific. And this went on for like 2 years, and each time got worse and worse. There is a trigger warning right now. She did attempt to take her life 13 times before she was successful on the 14th time. And that was via an overdose. I only say that because this is public information now. And, I remember her final day, and I went around. She didn't seem to be acting quite right. And I said to her mum, she was at her mum's place, and I said, call the ambulance right now. She's taken something. I said, I don't know what, but she's taken something. And for the first time out of all the times that I'd taken her to hospital, it was always me because it was highly emotional and my mum couldn't handle it. So I used to do every single one. Liv said to me, Dad, don't leave. I'm really scared. That's the first time that she'd said that. So I knew something was up, but I'm like, you know something. And she said, I'm not telling you what I took. I'm like, okay. Yeah, that was her, well, within 24 hours, that was the last time that she could speak. Then she was in a coma. She was transferred to the Royal Children's Hospital here. And we had to make the decision of switching off her life support because her whole, she was effectively brain dead. And you know, through all that, I mean, I have a, this is her. Now, how could you see that as ever being ugly, right? And she only saw herself as ugly. She was cremated, so, and it's a cold day, and she always wore a grey beanie. So this is her here. Whenever I do anything significant, she comes with me. When I've met the Prime Minister here, you know, she comes with me, and I always introduce her. And so I talk to her every day and do all that kind of stuff. And as you can imagine, well, it's hard to imagine. I didn't know. I didn't want to be in this situation. And I, even up to having to make the decision to switch off her life support, I kind of didn't believe it. I thought, no, she's going to be okay. She's going to come through this. And when we had to switch off the life support, she was going to pass in 10 minutes. I'm walking out of the room, so M was with us as well, and she said, I don't want to stay. I said, all right, I'll take you home. And I can remember walking down the corridor out of her room and saying, I just want to die right now. Like, I need to die right now so that I can wait for her, whatever your belief is. Like, I'm not particularly religious, but I just felt like I need to be there with her. I need to be with her to protect her. And I took a few more steps and I'm like, hang on a second. You've got M. You need to be, M needs you right now, more than ever, right now. So you have to stay here. And it was in the, like the coming days, I didn't know what to, like you're kind of numb. It's like, it's a bizarre, I can't explain it. And I hope no one ever has to go through it. But I knew that my foundation is movement. And so I would go out walking and within 24 hours, I'm like, the thing that would have helped Liv was therapy dogs in hospital, and they wouldn't really allow it. And the time we tried to organize it privately, it was just, it was logistically, it was not able to happen. And so I started a GoFundMe page, and I'm like, I'm going to set a goal for $10,000 to raise money to put therapy dogs in where Liv spent her time. And within 3 days, I'd met with the heads of the hospital, and we, long story short, we created a therapy dog program in the eating disorder wing of Monash Children's Hospital by virtue of Liv and my meeting with them and the drive to make change, and it didn't cost a cent. I raised $10,000 within a week or 2 weeks maybe, and that then went to fund another organization, brand new dog therapy program, which is called Liv's Loving Paws. And that's at the Alfred Hospital here. And that's helping kids before they go into hospital and after hospitalization from eating disorders. It's only eating disorders. And because that's what I was passionate about. And then one thing just led to another. You know, a parliamentarian here, a federal one, stood up in Parliament and mentioned Liv on the day of her memorial service. And that triggered a $50 million funding from the federal government into eating disorder research. And so we're now, it's just one thing led to another. It opened up another door. And I'm like, how can I use Liv? I wasn't thinking, I'm going to create a legacy for my daughter. What I did think was, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but at the time I thought, I'm going to create a video documentary, five-part, six-part series or something for Netflix about Liv's life, because this beautiful child, I've never met somebody that's been more gentle and more beautiful and more loving, and how could the world crush her spirit? I'm going to let the world know who she was. And it was through that that I was going to do it. The irony is a lot of the world knows her and I haven't even done that part yet. And I just felt that it's my duty as her dad to show the world who this beautiful girl is and still is. And so it's $56.5 million of funding through different things, as well as the impact on changing. Liv was a key part of the 36 months project, which has been about increasing the age of social media access for kids from 13 to 16 here. It's now law, and I think it's 11th of December here. It becomes compulsory, but they've given the platforms a year to get their stuff into order. And Liv has been a big part of that, not just her story, but she's been part of the story along with other kids that have gone the same way with social media. And I never thought I would do any of it. And now I realize that probably what I will be remembered for is Liv's legacy, because that's touched more people around the world.
So I'm going to just, we're not done with that at all, but it's interesting. So we started, and I did this on purpose. We started with your whole business journey and the valley and going that. And I knew, because we talked before, that you had this deeply moving and powerful personal thing that happened only a couple, 3 years ago. And yeah, in the last, what's that?
2023, April.
Yeah, so 2 years ago. I knew it was two or three, so I said 2 or 3 years. But anyway, so in the last 2 years, and you have done this thing, and just like quitting accounting and building a business, or the business not doing well and figuring out what to do, you didn't expect this. You didn't know it. You didn't want it. It's come at this tremendous personal cost. And here you are now intentionally creating with a passion to save others, to bless others, to change the laws, social media access, content things, whatever it is. To add, I use the phrase, add good to the world in ways that you never expected. And you said you were 57. So you started this when you were 55 and with no idea anywhere in your life that this would be, I don't know, the most, but one of the most important things you do while you breathe air, right?
Yeah.
And that was the genesis of this possible thing at the United Nations. It was in the context of this work. About right. Having more awareness, some changes in the laws about social media access, and some other things. Why was the social media access such an important part of this? Because what you've said is, she had an eating disorder, and you didn't know what to do, and she did this and that and the other, and she might have been on the spectrum. And so that paints a particular picture. But one of the things you've focused on is changing the way social media is used, particularly with youngsters. Why is that so important?
Well, like I said, when I started on the journey, I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't know which direction. And I just kept going from like meeting people. Like it just opened doors to be able to meet with CEOs and just, you know, like referral from, like Callum knows the CEO of here. So you send an email and bang, it just opens that door straight away. And so I just got invited to these things. I was on... I've been on over 1,200 media pieces now, and the media spotlight just had me go into people's Google searches and stuff, so people reached out. And so it started as the dog therapy. It then led to other things and the research and all of that kind of stuff, and me just working with different organizations. And then 60 Minutes did a story, and they wanted to go deep into some of this stuff, and then they touched on the... they wanted to be about the social media side of things. And, we went deep into that. And then the 36 Months Project team saw the 60 Minutes story, and they reached out to me and said, we want you to be part of this movement, which I didn't even know about at the time, which was about changing the law from 13 to 16. Now, where it impacted Liv was it didn't start her eating disorder. What started her eating disorder was bullying. But we held out on... like giving her phone access and like signing up to, it was Instagram she signed up to, not Facebook, and then TikTok and YouTube she was using. She was 13 and maybe even 14 when she got, maybe 13 or 14. And like teaching her, her sister was a couple of years ahead. So, you know, getting her to ask her sister also and making her aware of what happens and what's not real and people reaching out and all that kind of stuff. But what happened was, so her eating disorder was triggered, but then she started to go on a bit of a dive on social media looking for different things. Now, of course, if you know, as I'm saying this, somebody could be listening and say, well, why didn't you just take the phone away? Why didn't you just do this, whatever? We didn't know, right? We didn't know that this was going on, because what started out as innocently looking at like cat videos on YouTube.
Right. Cats on roller skates, right?
That's right. And then turned into cooking and then craft. She was very into her craft and design work and all that kind of stuff. So she'd be using it as education. But then what was happening in the darkness of her thoughts was she was going into these things. And so she, as she was getting heavier into the eating disorder, look, to be frank, I'm not going to talk about specifics, because every interview that I do, I don't want to give anyone that's listening any hint of an idea of what's possible, right?
All right, so let's not do that.
But, yeah, so she was finding things, and then she was getting fed more of that stuff and more and more and more, right, from exercise to food to, I mean, this one's out in the public domain, but she'd come to me with this stuff and said, Dad, this person's saying they're only eating 200 calories a day. And I'm like, show me what it is. And it's some young girl that is maybe a bit older than Liv, maybe not, and talking about what it is that they're eating. And I said, Liv, what you need to keep in mind is that these people lie for whatever reason. So I don't understand what's in that person's head as to why they would do that, but you need at least, you know, X number of calories to sustain life. And I said, you can't do that on this. And so if they're saying one thing, it's not the truth. And this is the reason why. But that's just one example. You can find a whole bunch of other stuff, and then you start getting it over and over and over. And of course, we didn't know until the end. And then if you then go on a dark dive on, I don't want to be here anymore, use your imagination, then that's going to present you with a whole bunch of stuff as well. And unfortunately, this is why you're going to the United Nations. And now I think part of Liv's journey is to help other countries get the picture that we need to make changes to our laws here too. Let's give it, we're not saying about banning it, but we're saying, let's give our kids another 3 years. Like if you think about like 13, 14, 15, 16, our kids are trying to find their way in the world. And yet if you jump on there right now, are there 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids that are saying that they're millionaires, whatever, they're living their life a certain way, making life look a certain way, and like you're stuck in your place thinking, but I'm a no one then, I'm a failure, I'm not doing that. And yet you and I know, Callum, that so many people lie and they hold out.
90% of that's not true. So yeah. I love what you've done. And here's what we have. We have 2 minutes left. And thank you for sharing that. And I want to take us back up to possibility. Now, I know you do too. So I want you to talk about two things. What do you think? There's lots of stuff about our world that needs to be fixed. Laws and good people and bad people, and that's all true. I want you to address two things. One is, what are you doing and what is possible for me and others to make the kind of changes around us and in our own lives so that we matter? And that we live in that place of having a great life like we started. What is possible?
I think the first place is if you want things to be better for you, if you want a better life, and most people, I think we're born materialistic and people think money will solve all their problems. No, it won't. There are plenty of examples of like multimillionaires, billionaires that are no longer here, people that are highly successful that are no longer here. And so if you want something to be better in any area of your life, start with you. Look in the mirror. Start with you. Change you. And that's going to come from realizing I need personal growth. I need to change, right? I need to find ways to do that. Get a coach to help you with that. You can use AI to help you strategically grow. Don't just be entertained, grow you, change you. And if you become better, that then overflows. I like to think of it as like a cup in the middle. It's like liquid flowing over into all the other areas of your life. If you are the cup and you are empty, then none of those other areas of your life are going to be impacted in a positive way, only negatively. But if you're overflowing with kindness, with growth, with wanting to have an impact on others, change that as well. You want more money in your life? How do you add value to more people? We'll change you first, make you better. You will then look at, how do I add value in the job that you're in? Maybe you're the janitor. Fantastic. Do the best that you can there. You can greatly impact people. You run your own business. Don't focus on the dollars so much. Obviously, they're important. But when I shifted from moving from what's the dollars I need to make to how can I impact Callum more deeply, that's when everything started to change. And you just look at life very, very, very differently. I mean, we are limitless. There is nothing you can't achieve. You've just got to believe in yourself, but you've got to keep growing. And don't just, I'm going to grow this month. Focus on it every single day. And if your health and your wellness is not your number one priority, then you've got to shift it to be that.
So the last question I want to, I have time for one more, and that is, tell us how to follow you. Tell us how to support either getting myself, starting with my health and wellness, or support the work you're doing with Liv's Legacy. Like, tell me,
yeah, sure.
Tell us how to find everything.
Yeah, so you can see my name on the screen there, Rob Evans with two Bs. I'm on all the social platforms. My podcast is called The Mental Toughness and Body Show. That's the main one to follow. The other one's Rob Evans 365, which is just more of a, if you want to get to know the more casual type of me. If you look up the 1%coach.com.au, that's where everything is linked into everything that I do, from health and wellness to coaching to Liv's Legacy to the podcast, all of that kind of thing. That's the best way.
Rob, I want to thank you for sharing, for your love, for your dedication, for your commitment, and for crawling over the broken glass, business-wise and personally, and being the light that you are in the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be on your show.
So I want you guys to think about this. You've heard a business up and down. You've heard a personal tragedy that would melt many people's hearts and minds. And you've seen that person, Rob, rise up and create a life that he described at the beginning as the best day of his life. And that can be yours too, any day and every day. You literally create your life. So I plead with you, and I'm explaining to, I live that way too. That's why I call it the ultimate life. I live that way every day. You can do it. Listen to this a couple of times. Go find Rob on social. Support his work. And most importantly, decide and declare what you are about, and choose to make a difference while you create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.